Welcome to the Growler, a Hootay podcast hosted by Paul Daner and other bald friends like Mo Egger, Dave Nanamets, home of all your Bengals breaks, takes. Welcome to the Growler.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of the Growler. It's Balds Don't Lie, Paul Daner Jr., Dave Nanamets here with you on a Monday. Dave, how are we doing?
Doing all right. It's been a while since I've been on here.
Welcome back.
Got to refresh myself with the format. Yeah. But the song cheered me up. And it was,
yeah.
I love the song.
When you go away for a little bit and you come in, you're like, oh, yeah. It kind of makes me happy a little bit. This could be a good streak of three straight episodes where I do a shoulder shake in the first 2 minutes.
I like it. Like a smug bed bug. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting excited. Well, happy Eclipse Day to you, Dave.
Yeah. Are you going to find your way into the path of totality? Or the trail of totality?
But I'm putting the glasses on right now.
You know who is? It's going right over Hamilton, Ohio. And I have zero doubt a certain fellow we know is going to be out there scarfing down Arby's curly fries and just staring at the sun, burning out his rods and cones. And you'll see him on the next show with some sort of bandages over his eyes, because it's how they roll in Hamilton.
Yep. Snuck down into the front row. You get the best view of the sun.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah. And before, Jay and I hope we'll have to discuss his lunar eclipse philosophy.
Will this yield any, you think any alien activity will come out of this? You can carry on to Mo as well. I mean, the eclipse could be very fertile for material for this show.
Mo will be on in a little bit. We'll ask him his thoughts on the potential for alien activity with this incident. Yeah, I mean, it's always possible. I'm over the eclipse. I'm going to actually talk to Mo about, like, what is the eclipse topic in the Bengals world. Like, that's just, I can't believe it's been talked about this long for what amounts to 4 minutes. If you're lucky, it's just so much. It's just a lot, but we got a lot of other stuff to get to, Dave, a lot to get to today. I mentioned Mo's going to come on. I have my big board 1.0, which is totally different than a mock draft. Okay, so it's like a totally different way to say names and discuss them. That is going to be out tomorrow morning. But I do think that there are some interesting things when you really start the process of trying. And I know everybody's always constantly doing that. But like to really say this guy versus that guy, crossing positions, getting into that actual world of what does that look like. And I think there were some parts of it that are particularly hard, I think, for this year's team. And so we can talk about that a little bit before we get in to it with Mo. And we'll talk about some other bits of news that are popping off. Tavondre Sweat from Texas, the big run-stopping defensive tackle, caught a DWI this weekend. Obviously, the Bengals had him in. Obviously, they have him interested. He's kind of a very much second-round mocked player to the Bengals. I want to talk a little bit about him and character and these types of things through the Bengals lens anymore, because that's changed a little bit. And I feel like that's an interesting combo that we can have as we get into stuff. But let's start ticking through a bit of news. Wednesday, everybody. Big day Wednesday. Not just me and Jay back for our latest episode, and we're going to find out about, you know, his bandages on his eyes. But the Beast is out Wednesday, which is, I mean, the milepost as far as I'm concerned in draft coverage. It's when the conversation goes from being, I think, to, no, this is like we can really tangibly look at this now and be very serious, because nobody goes deeper than Dane. If you probably know, if you're listening to this podcast by now, we'll have him on between now and the draft and talk a little bit more about it. But that comes out Wednesday. A lot of good stuff that we can do off that. Everybody's looking forward to that. I mean, the amount of people that we have now at The Athletic working behind the scenes to get that thing to the finish line beyond what Dane does as a one-man just animal is
it's ridiculous. Like an encyclopedia. It's crazy how much he gets in there. And I think what's always cool about it, and I think one thing we'll, you know, all the writers will delve into, is you can kind of start getting a better idea of those later round guys too. You start looking at interesting names and how they fit, and you find out some information about guys that we've just seen their names bounced around. But Dane gets so into it, you start finding out everything about these dudes. So I think we'll have some pretty cool content coming up, just kind of digging into to guys that could fall into where the Bengals pick even later than the first few picks.
There is no question. It's going to be fantastic. So all that coming your way here for too long. Let's on Wednesday, we're going to dive into the wide receivers with Jay. So keep an eye out for that. We'll talk a little bit more of that. Hayden Winks from Underdog Fantasy. They have done incredible work putting together videos of each receiver prospect. It's great stuff. Talk with him a little bit. You'll hear from him on Wednesday as well as we dive into the receivers and how big that's going to be coming up here soon. Let's we've got Joe Burrow making an appearance this week. Yeah. Who's ready? He's going to be at the live New Heights podcast at Nippert at Night. It's the whole thing. Burrow in the building. We've got Kelsey's, who knows who else will show up over there. Quite a deal, man. You could, what a great thing for the podcast world, you know, like it's just really incredible. But Burrow signing up to be there, that's quite a get.
It's a huge get. It's just crazy to me how far those, just their status in pop culture right now, the Kelsey brothers. Mm-hmm. I think Jason was in WrestleMania the other night.
Yeah.
Like the first night of it. Mm-hmm. And then when you see him get a guy like Burrow, it's like they're kind of doing whatever they want right now. So that'd be interesting to see what Burrow has to say. Those seem to be the places where we get tidbits about like his comeback from injury, and like he'll kind of give some clues of where he's at, hopefully.
Yeah, you never quite. I think the fact that he's agreed to do it is a great sign. I mean, I think it shows, and kind of what you've seen, he's been out and about more. The offseason program's coming up soon. It just seems to be all of this has continued to be, as we've said, good signs of progress. If he was like having concerns and not super, he's not going to want to go into a high profile event like that. Everybody knows that's what's going to be something that's going to be talked about. Seems like a lot of happiness and confidence happening over in that realm. If you judge by, hey, he's agreeing to do that. And that's been the case. That's everything that we've heard this entire time in the background. It's just a matter of going through the process. Here I go again, taking your steps. Let's wait and see it. See what it looks like as you get closer to the season and the strength builds all the way up. That's all I'm saying. But more and more good signs is all that is. We'll be in the building next week. Offseason program begins soon. Players be back. You'll have that kind of part of everything kicking back up, which is good. Which is good. We'll hear from Zach Taylor. We'll hear from, of course, Duke Tobin for the draft. We'll have some open locker rooms where we can kind of get more on where a lot of players and people are at. And some of them might not be at Paycor Stadium, which could be news as well.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think we know who they are. I do. I would not expect to walk up and be able to talk to T. Higgins on that first practice day.
Yeah.
Would not anticipate that. Let's talk about the big board. So I think when I kind of went through this exercise and we've all kind of done versions of this, obviously, but there's just a couple things that I just pinning this down, how fascinating this is for the Bengals is that I think we can circle these group of offensive linemen pretty clearly. That's not a secret. We've been talking about that for months.
Yeah.
The question is, who infiltrates that group and where? So ranking the offensive linemen is its own thing. And they're going through that process right now of, you know, Telis Fuaga, Troy Fatanyu, Amarius Mims, Olufoshanu, J.C. Latham. I mean, Joe Alt, I guess, you know, you've got all of these names there that are in the mix. Well, where does Byron Murphy fit in there? Where does Brock Bowers fit in there? Where do the corners fit in there? Where does Johnny Newton, the other defensive tackle from Illinois, where does he fit in there? I think figuring out where to put those in is inevitably going to be insanely important, because that's very easily the decision that decides what direction you end up going with all these paths that we've talked about. And I found that really hard. The Murphy one, I sort of flip back and forth with, because it's tough.
You see an interesting range with Murphy. Some experts and analysts see him going way up, and then others see him dropping further than I would think he'd go. But doesn't it kind of hinge on whether there's a run on these offensive tackles? If you get teams trading up and you get a few teams that want them, I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that you see a Bowers drop. Maybe I'm crazy because, he's rated so high and everybody has so much buzz about him. But I think that's where the Bengals are in kind of an interesting spot, because I think we just assume they can have their pick of these offensive linemen. But what if there's a run on them? Do you suddenly, if you've rated a guy kind of on the bottom end of that group you mentioned, but one of these other studs drops down there, then it gets back to the old best available. And you've talked about it, that 18's just kind of a good spot, but it's also such a variable, you know, like you're going to get a good player there, but it's just, are you going to meet a need at that point? And I think you're right. It's sorting out those offensive linemen to figure out who's going where. You know, you even mentioned Joe Alt on the big board, and I don't think anyone sees Joe Alt dropping, but who knows? Like, we still have a couple weeks to go, and who knows how people fall in love with other guys. So it's hard to pinpoint.
We see this in this time of year a lot, is that the consensus, and you know, we can look up the consensus big board here, and you can see where the general draft industry complex has decided to say about people, and those are narratives, right? And it's where the what ends up coming out a lot in the week before the draft is a much more accurate view than now, because there's a lot of, well, the media is here, but teams are here. Okay. Mm-hmm. These are teams don't see, and because these narratives have been spinning for so long and they get out of control and gain steam, it's, well, it's not really the way it is. And you see that a lot, specifically when you get into this middle portion of round one, where anybody with eyes can tell you, well, you know, Malik Nabers, I think, is pretty good, and probably will go early in this draft. But once you get into that middle, more into that middle ground, you see narratives that have taken over, and players that teams really like that ascend. And so you end up all over the place. But for me, you know, I think the guys that we have seen come in to town on these visits, Tyleese Fuaga, mm-hmm. Troy Fotanyu, Amarius Mims, I think they're in for a reason. And because I think that's where they see the top fit group for them. Now, I would throw J.C. Latham in there, but you don't know specifically, you know, if there's still more visits to happen or whatever. This isn't about visits, but like, you know, that's an open. Let me remind you last year, okay? Emmanuel Forbes, who we know they really liked, came in. Miles Murphy came in. Nolan Smith came in. Nolan Smith went one pick after Miles Murphy. You know, the previous year, Cam Taylor-Britt came in for a late visit. They were eyeing him in round two. Like, we know this is part of it, and I think the early indication with that shows you what we already knew, which is, boy, that feels like the core group. I have Fuaga, Fotanyu, Mims in that order. But again, I think these are things these are things that they have not hashed out yet. Okay, like, they have a general idea, but they have to sit down and officially put that order in, and that is not complete. So we can all sit here and say, I got this, I got that, they're going to do this. They don't know exactly what they're going to do yet, but I think we know the general grouping, you know, of who it's going to be, who they're looking at.
But is there, I mean, I guess there's always the chance too that someone shows up at their pick that they had never dreamed would still be there. I mean, I think we look at so many mocks, we don't think that one of those top receivers could ever drop down, but they could. I mean, do you feel like the Bengals are the kind of team that are going to stick to what you're talking about, you know, the core that they've brought in and who they sort out as their guys? Or do you think they're the type of team that will swerve off the plan if they're surprised by somebody that's too good to pass up on?
I don't think you'd see a major swerve. You never know because of what we've mentioned with the variables of that area. But I just think, you know, the one thing about all these tackles being, it's just you got to take advantage of it. Okay, the draft hands you things certain years, okay? And this year, the draft is handing a bunch of teams that want offensive line help tons of it in round one. And so to not take advantage of what is going to be there for them, to me, would be a misstep, and I think is part of their plan and makes the most sense. And so I just feel like they're leaning into that. I don't see them, like they went 2 decades without taking a defensive lineman in the first round, and they took Miles Murphy last year. I don't see them piling another guy on there where they're already trying to figure out where to find snaps for Miles Murphy. I know it's best player available, and they did that last year, but it, you know, I think at a certain point you have to think about the full totality of the team. Totality. Yeah. There I am, snuck it in there.
well done.
Yeah, thank you. But it's, and that's why I don't, you know, see a major swerve. But I think you talk about Murphy, and I think he's the one wild card for me that you swerve for. I have him up in the top, and I put him in there in the middle of those guys, but picking between those. You know, you're splitting hairs. You know, everybody has their pluses and minuses. Mims doesn't have a ton of experience, right? But he looks exactly like the other guys that they've signed, okay? Like this freakish 6'8", 340, 56, like Trent Brown, Orlando Brown, Amarius Mims are in the same body, okay? And they're the ones doing this and valuing those types of fits more than anything else. So, yeah, that makes sense. But what are you getting? Fuaga has all these, the intensity that you love. Like, you love the way he plays. You've got the pass protecting element where he's been a specialist there, and that's what you want. Fatanyu, the same way. And they both bring you some position flex where they could move around if you needed them to. Mm-hmm. And you love that, you know, as a chance to put somebody somewhere else if that fits you at a time and that can cover you in multiple spots. But you have all the talent you would ever want. Latham is essentially, and Mims are in that same conversation where there's pros and cons to them, but big, powerful, anchored, pass pro. Like, we hear these terms from them over and over again. So that group, you know, all just seem to fit snug. And so where Bowers to me goes behind them all, because that's the plan. Cause that fits so much of everything they want to do and have done that I don't see them saying, you know what, we're going to go above these tackles that all fit us so well. If that were to happen. But I think that's a tough conversation that they're having to have, is those two guys in particular, is Murphy and Bowers, and where do they fit amongst this plan A positional fit?
Yeah. I mean, I would say with Bowers, history just tells us after last year and what they've done the last few years that they're just not going to put that value on a tight end. I think as fans and observers, we drool at the idea of that being a weapon for Joe Burrow and being a way to offset if and when T. Higgins is gone, another pass catcher. But like I said, what they've shown would indicate if you weren't going to take a tight end last year, I don't think you're taking a tight end in the first round this year. He may be a little bit different than the rest, but I just don't see that. I've thought from the beginning, Murphy is just, I've said, I think he's another Christian Wilkins. He's another Quinnen Williams. He's one of these guys that has the potential to come in and just dominate. And those are the guys getting the big bucks right now because everybody wants them. So I would swerve for him personally, but I get what you're saying too, that you get this big crop of great offensive linemen or potentially great offensive linemen. And it's hard to ignore that, especially since you've done some patchwork over the years to keep the offensive line together.
Yeah. I mean, there are positions that they've done just fine at tight end, right tackle. They've just done just fine at finding value in free agency and putting guys that come in there and have been solid starters. The problem, they haven't been able to keep them healthy, but I mean, they haven't been terrible pieces over there. Whereas you just cannot find game wrecking defensive tackles anywhere other than the first round of the draft. Like, it's almost impossible. Okay. And so, and Byron Murphy, like, I'll get more into this when we talk specifically about the defensive tackles, but you know, I you go back and you look at win rate and true pass set win rate in PFF stuff over the last 10 years. And he is up at the top of the list in the last 10 years. And that, and those that have led Power Five in that category, I bet you can know some of the names on the list. They're very rich these days. You know, it's names like Christian Barmore and Quinnen Williams and Jeffrey Simmons and Jonathan Allen and Chris Jones, DeForest Buckner, Grady Jarrett. Those are the names on the list. Okay. And Byron Murphy's numbers are actually better than all of them. Almost. There are a couple of busts in that group, but that's it. Like, that's where these guys are coming from. That's where they get picked in the first round. And so that's why, is he a real dude? You know, that's a question for them to figure out, but numbers suggest he will be. And look at these contracts. Like, this is the defensive tackle has follow the money, man. This league is follow the money league. Teams know what, you know, that's when you have all this quick game, all this two shell, everything is there. It's, you got to be able to get in the quarterback's face and make them comfortable right in front of them. Their quarterbacks are so much better at dealing with these edge rushers. That's why so much money is going to these defensive tackles, and they're so hard to find. There's so much fewer of them. And so when you could have a guy, man, that's insanely valuable. And I just think there's a lot of tough conversations to be had about where that fits inside of that plan A offensive tackle group. Yeah. And that's, and I think that's the question of round one for me at this point from a Bengals perspective. And, you know, we'll detail it more as I get into the defensive tackles and talk more with some of the coaches and Duke and Zach as we get back in the building to even hone down even more. And, but it's a tough one for them to figure out. And I think the whole league is trying to figure that out too, because not everybody's sold on Byron Murphy. I mean, that's not a slam dunk. Everybody is sold on the concept of having someone who does things that Byron Murphy did at Texas last year. And if that's where you end up in that conversation. All right, let's shift. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
It's also nice to have that guy on his rookie contract if he truly is a stud. I mean, that's when you look at the paydays on these guys, to have this guy for a few years that you're paying a rookie salary, that is massive. So I think that should, but offensive tackle too gets paid a lot. So, you know, you get a young guy in there. The only thing is they've got veteran tackles set right now. So I don't know. I don't think you can go wrong. These guys are all going to be good.
They're all good. They're all good players. You can go wrong, Dave. That's why we talk about it as much as we do. Do not forget it. All right.
It's true.
Let's bring in our good friend and yours, Mo Egger, to chat with us. Welcome in. Good to have you here.
Hi.
Happy Eclipse Day to you.
I'm excited. Are you and your family prepared?
I got the
glasses. Oh, okay. Very good. I was driving up 71 the other day, and one of those signs, solar eclipse, April 8th, plan ahead. Have you and your family planned ahead?
Yeah, because we had to, because school is out.
Oh, yeah, we had that too. Fortunately, my wife is off today, so we did have to plan ahead in that regard.
We got the half day. The half day at daycare is what we got out of it, so we're utilizing that right now, but then we're just back in the driver's seat again, so school's like, yeah, we'll let y'all handle this.
Yeah,
so fine, that's fine. Okay. I have one question for you that I feel like is a good way to start on a Monday morning. Let's. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of a weird weekend, right? We had a lot of weird stuff happening on. I'll get to some of the weird stuff.
Okay.
In a second.
Yeah.
But so let's start with some kind of. Let's just start with some pessimism.
Right. Oh, okay.
I think that's a great place to start your week off.
Oh boy. Okay? Yeah. Here we go.
What's your biggest fear about the Bengals draft? I think everybody kind of has something where it's like, I hope they don't try to do this again. Or I hope this doesn't turn into a, oh, we decided to do that. Is there something in the back of your head with this draft, whether it's from a first round or a overall perspective, that you're like, I have nervousness or apprehension about this happening?
That maybe they overthink it, right? Mm-hmm. That maybe they try to get a little bit too cute. You know, we talked about this on this podcast and we talked about this on my show. I think the possibility of them trading the 18th pick is really interesting. And I could understand why they would do that. At the same time, sometimes it's like, look, there's a player here who's really good, who fits what you want. Just take him. Right.
Yeah.
And so, not that I feel like that's going to be my takeaway in the immediate aftermath of the draft, but you could certainly see a point where, you know, down the road, hey, they could have taken this guy at 18. Instead, they got cute and they got crazy and they added extra picks. And boy, this player they could have taken ended up being exactly what they wanted, and they should have just taken him. Like, for as interesting and for as much merit as there is to the idea that you could flip the 18th pick for more draft capital so you could address all these different positions. You know, if we're talking about, as you guys just were, a defensive tackle, or we're talking about an offensive lineman, particularly a right tackle, and a player that you have graded high on your board is there, there is a part of me that just says, just don't overthink this. Just take them. And so I don't know that that's fear. I don't know that that's apprehension. That's kind of the fun part of the draft, right?
Yeah.
Is to look 3-4 years down the road and see how the decision-making, you know, if it worked. And that's not to say that I'm opposed to making a trade. In fact, I'm more in favor of making one than not. At the same time, you know, sometimes the obvious is a little bit too obvious, right? And so if the obvious is, here's a guy they need who plays the position that they need to address, there is a part of me that says, look, just take the player and move on. And how that plays out, I'm not fearful, but I think is interesting.
This is piggybacking off of something that I just talked with Dave about in regards to, you know, setting up my big board, which is much different than a mock draft.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you know, what does the Bengals board look like, obviously? And to me, it's take what the draft gives you.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes just take, everyone is acknowledging, and because I think it is obvious, this draft is giving you tackles in round one and receivers in round two. You need both of those things, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're both great. Your offense succeeding with Joe Burrow at the helm is the key to your success. And I'm not here to kick. And again, we just talked about Byron Murphy and defensive tackles. It's all fine. But what is the draft giving you? The draft is giving you this gift of protection for Joe Burrow in round one at 18. You're not supposed to get, you know, certifiable, perfect, really strong fits at this point in the first round. It's giving you that gift. Take it.
Yeah.
Right. It's giving you this gift of receivers that can be an ideal fit for what you have in your system to play in between two great outside guys, or one that has versatility to move everywhere. You can even get inside outside versatility dudes that can give you explosiveness, all this other stuff in the middle of the round two. Take what the draft is giving you.
Mm-hmm.
I worry about them going too far out. Like, you know, we're best player available. Yeah. Best player available is part of what fits your team where it's at right now, and not getting too involved. Like, I don't want to see a Darquez, Denard, Dre Kirkpatrick, fifth corner who's going to play special teams, but he's going to be there in the future.
Right.
Stick with the draft is getting you the guys that can help you this year, next year, that you see in your very near future plans that fit where your roster is currently constructed, and not get too cute.
Yeah. So, you know, let's just say there's a right tackle who you feel like, and who the consensus says could play week one. and be comparable, if not even better, in the short term than the guy you had playing the position last year. That's a lot to ask. But that player is there, and you say no, and you trade down, and you add a Friday pick or a Friday pick and a Saturday pick, whatever, and you take a player who's maybe not quite as good. It may work. It may work. And there's, again, there's a lot of validity to the suggestion that they're better off addressing every position of need that they can by accumulating picks. But you're right, man. I mean, if priority number one for the Cincinnati Bengals is to ensure that Joe Burrow is healthy, what's wrong with taking the guy who best ensures his health? And if that player is there at 18 and there's a guy that you could maybe take at, I don't know, 24, 25, 26, who's maybe not quite as good, is that really a gamble worth taking? I think it's a fair question. So you're right. I mean, it's pretty obvious what they need, and what they need meshes with where the depth is and where the quality is in rounds one and two. So do you have to overthink it? You know, do we have to twist ourselves in knots trying to come up with ways where they could add draft capital? Not necessarily. And so I'm really interested. You know, the draft is always interesting, but where they are right now because of the possibilities is fascinating. And again, I'm not going to say on draft night that there is a wrong answer, but it will be really fascinating to see how things play out in regards to what they do, in regards to maybe some of the things they could have done, including just take the best tackle available with the 18th overall pick.
Yeah. Or, you know, see which tackle is going to turn into a future bust that fans hate forever. In round two or three.
Right. Yeah.
Right. That's what ends up happening, you know, because you just certain things that you got to try to solidify. And because that guy's going to have to play, you just don't, there's just the success stories are non-existent, you know.
Right.
I know we did that whole thing. I don't want to go down that road again, because we already did that topic. But like, it's part of taking what the draft gives you, you know. And so I think, you know, outside of them giving you the next Geno Atkins potentially for your team and your franchise, you know, it feels like there's few other things that should take you into that place. Like you start looking at the corners, or, you know, but the edge rusher just had the talent. He was one notch above.
Right.
And it's like, oh, but now that's a guy. He's going to be what? He's been battling Joseph Osai for edge four. Like, I get that. Like but he is the player who he is. And you're going to say, maybe you need him. Yeah. But it doesn't really fit what you really need right now. And those are the get cute moves that then put you in weird places in round two, three, and four.
I want to know on Thursday and Friday which players that they could draft put this team in a better position to win the title this year.
Mm-hmm.
I have never been less interested in the future. I mean, I'm serious. Yeah. Like I've never been. I get it. You know, I've said often Duke Tobin's not a fan. Duke Tobin's got an interesting job, like everybody else in his capacity that actually has the title of GM, where you have to balance short-term concerns with long-term considerations. So his job is to fortify the short-term and ensure that the future is going to be bright. I'm putting that clumsily, but I don't care. I want to win the title this year. I mean, the whole thing for me behind not wanting to trade T. Higgins is I want to take a go at it with this core group of guys, and I think they can. And so I'm less interested in, hey, here's a project that, you know, we're not going to ask much of them this year, but wait a year. I'm not interested. I want to know who are the players that can best help them win in 2024. And chances are those guys could also help you win in 2025 and beyond. For the first time, maybe ever, I'm looking at the draft through a very, very, very narrow lens. And so if a player is added on Thursday and Friday and the narrative surrounding him is, well, he's the kind of guy, you know, you're not going to get much of from him this year because they have players at his position, or he's a bit of a project, not interested. I want guys on Thursday and Friday that you could plug into certain roles that make this team better equipped to win a title this year. That is not the lens through which I usually look at a draft, and I know it's not the lens through which a guy like Duke Tobin looks at the draft, but me as a fan, I think they can win the whole thing this year. And again, keeping T. Higgins, being adamant about keeping T. Higgins for me is I want to win it this year. They're best equipped to win it with T. Higgins this year. So I want everything subsequent to the decision to keep T. Higgins to fall in line with that, what is better off for winning the title this year? And I think you can make a clear case for, look, the player at 18 who's just better than the guy you're going to take at 26 aligns with that.
Yeah. I view the outside X receiver future T. Higgins in the get cute mold as well. Like, when the receiver comes, he better be able to play inside or have inside outside versatility, because I don't want to see the net. Because if you're going for it, right, by keeping T, then not using your other prime assets to complement that decision as well. You of course want the next T, but I just don't like the idea of looking at the receiver group. And we'll talk more about this with Jay on Wednesday as we do the full receiver dive, but like of going there. Cause I feel like that is the antithesis of the decision you're making with T here, unless you're trading him and really going for the full craziness.
Yeah.
I mean, the decision that you're making here, I think what you do with drafting the receiver needs to complement that, not back up 20, 25, 26, 27 in that regard. You go down that road when you more need to go down that road, specifically with the way receivers can so quickly be implemented here. I don't think you need to go a year early on that. You know, you need somebody that can be a menace inside and also work outside to give you the ability to move Jamar Chase around and keep defenses guessing as much as possible, not feel stationary in there. The guy that just plays outside or the guy that only can play inside on the slot are problematic in that regard. And so that's kind of the other get cute move that I have some fear, some apprehension about if they were to go that way.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I'm for anybody that allows them to use T in a variety of ways, which is something we've seen them try to do and something we've heard a lot about how they want to do. But they, I'm sure, want to do it even more. So give me somebody who makes Jamar Chase more flexible or more versatile. And then in the short term, I'm not interested in the, well, he's an outside guy. Okay, or he's an inside guy. Like, give me a guy who could be used as a chess piece in 2024. And again, like, that's my question on not so much after the draft, but just after the first two rounds, is can these players help them win this year? Because I think they can. And and if the answer to that is yes, then well, chances are they're going to fit somehow in the future too. But I'm for the first time ever, I'm looking at this really through a very simple, prism. I want to win the title this year because I think they can. And everything they've done this offseason so far, I think, should align with what the draft strategy is. So I'm going to ask that on Saturday morning, even before we get started with round four. Are they better equipped to win the title this year based on who they've drafted? Not that you draft somebody and that takes you from pretender to contender or from fringe contender to contender. I think they're contenders no matter what. But does the guy they take at 18 and the players they take on Friday, do those players – Do they make them a little bit stronger in the effort to win the title this year? And that to me is, for me, that is the draft storyline.
Yes. All right. But no, it's not the draft storyline, what I'm about to talk about.
Okay.
Well, one, it was brought up earlier that we should, I don't know if you have any opinion on if there's concerns about this eclipse causing alien activity.
Oh,
maybe I should broach that to you. Do you have any concerns? Is that something maybe we should revisit next week, is if the eclipse brought on any alien activity and if that's an issue, or is that something that you're looking for?
No.
Exactly. That was kind of my lean there. I wasn't going to go there, but I wanted to make sure we're together on that. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the thing though, between the eclipse and the fact that like we're now debating the validity of GOAT as a topic is like a thing now. I'm so sick of it.
Yeah.
What is the most beaten into the ground topic in the Bengals stratosphere that you can think of? Let's say over the past, just really Burrow era, fine. What is the most beaten into the ground topic that you just don't have the stomach for? I feel the eclipse has done that to me. Anytime I see the word GOAT used and people talking about its usage, it sends me to the dark place. Like, and I know those exist in the Bengals world.
Sure. Yeah.
What is it for you?
So really quickly on the GOAT thing, because everybody's doing this in the aftermath of the women's national championship game. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not equipped to tell you who the GOAT of women's college basketball is. I'm willing to admit that. What's funny is, so Iowa loses, and then I hear folks that go, well, she can't be the GOAT. And then my response is, cool, who is? And they don't know.
Yes.
So if you're going to tell me someone's not the GOAT, then you have to tell me who is. I hate GOAT talk.
Oh,
my take is on really quick on the Caitlin Clark thing is this. Magic Johnson is probably not the greatest basketball player of all time. And Larry Bird is probably not the greatest basketball player of all time. But they were really, really good and extraordinarily instrumental in the growth of that league, right? That's undeniable. Isn't that good enough? So
yeah.
20 years from now, if somebody says the name Caitlin Clark, I'm going to say, you know what? On a Friday evening, I was at an establishment in Northern Kentucky where there were 40 people transfixed on a women's college basketball game, primarily, not only, but primarily because of Caitlin Clark. That's a really damn good legacy.
Yep.
So I now in terms of Bengals, topics that have just been beaten into the ground. All right. Burrow era.
Well, let's go Burrow era. Although if you want to bring out some gems from the past, I'm here. I mean, I would say, go ahead. I have a gem from the past.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
What about gem from the past of the Bengals don't draft players with character problems anymore? That's a thing of the past. This is the early in my time covering the team from 10 to like 15. People were just crushing the Bengals every year. Any guy with character problems in round one or two, they were always like, well, you know, the Bengals will take them. And then Bengals fans would get all bent out of shape. Like, no, we don't do that anymore. And like, wow, they really don't do that anymore. They have kind of moved on from that. But you had to keep rehashing it over and over again every year at the same time of year. Just kept showing back up. That one was that one's up there for just – I just didn't have the stomach for it after a while. It would always be some random national person that would just set Bengals fans off with one comment or one thing said on a show, and off we go into that stupid conversation again.
Yes. So here's my blast from the past, okay? And you and I used to have some fun with this back in the day. Is the blackout going to be lifted?
Oh, my God.
Oh, wait a minute. They've applied for and they've gotten the 24-hour extension. And then, I mean, and sometimes this would happen during good seasons, right? 2009, 2012. I think 2012 was the last year of the blackout.
Yeah, the year that there was the BOGO at the in the last game to try to fill the stadium. Yeah.
So every, you know, you would do the same routine, like, you know, you guys would report like, well, on Monday, like, well, as of noon today, the Bengals said they have 8,000 tickets remaining. They've got to sell them out by 1 o'clock on Thursday. And then, you know, invariably I'd get phone calls from people upset that the game wasn't going to be on television, mad at the people who weren't buying tickets so they could watch the game on television.
Yes.
And then the whole, well, they've gotten the 24-hour extension. Who's going to buy the tickets? Why is nobody buying the tickets? Is Mike Brown going to buy the tickets and give them to somebody? And so we would do this on almost a weekly basis for years, wondering about the blackout, finger pointing about the blackout, having to talk about the blackout. And then that got to be completely and totally miserable. So thankfully the NFL got rid of that antiquated rule. We no longer have to do blackout talk. In the Burrow era, I'll be very simple about this. The Joe Mixon conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, to be fair, got really interesting once he left, because now he's in Houston. The Texans are going for it. They've paid him money. Like, suddenly Joe Mixon's a very fascinating character. But we had the conversation for so long that at the end there was nothing new to say, and it felt like you were either pro Joe or anti Joe, and I was neither. I was pro Bengals. Like, I want the Bengals to do what's best for the Bengals. But it just felt like this was a divisive issue where people on both sides planted their flag. And I was in favor of moving on a year ago. I was in favor of moving on here. And, you know, you could do the thing where you talk about what he's meant to the franchise and what type of player he was and how he bridged the gap from what the Bengals used to be to what they turned into and his role in that happening. But it felt like a lot of folks didn't want to do that. And so I remember just, you know, a month and a half ago going, God, if they keep Joe Mixon, I guess we don't really have to talk about him anymore. And if they move on from him, I guess we really don't have to talk about him anymore. That one to me, was the one that I had nothing else to say. And
no.
It felt like there was nothing else really out there that was original when the conversation came up until the Houston Texans decided to give him a bunch of money.
Yes. I think that's a clear number one. T. Higgins chasing him down though.
And
it was part of the reason why I wanted to do the one time I'm taking the big, this is it mm-hmm. on this thing with the four-part series, because I didn't want to have to keep coming back and doing it over and over and over and over again. And we're going on multiple years now with this. That's what happens when it starts stretching. Bates was like that, but Bates was interesting because he was kind of the first time through.
Yeah.
And the conversation changed at a couple of different spots. I just feel like we kind of keep going down this conversation. And it's important. It's not that these aren't important. They just wear on you. And it's like, we just talk about it. And it's something that always gets brought up. Anytime I ask for questions, it's like you would always get a Mixon question. And now you're always getting a Higgins question. And, you know, I bet you Joe Burrow being injury prone is going to be the one of the next 5 years. Is he? Mm-hmm. Isn't he? Like, what does that mean? And it's not that they're not important. They just... How many times can you talk about if a guy's injury prone or if what they should do with somebody over the course of, you know, almost 1,000 days, right? Yeah. Like we're multiple years. It just wears on you a little bit. And I think that's where I'm at, where every time it kind of happens now, I'm like, oh, are we going to have to do this again?
Yeah. I think for us, and I think you would say the same, like, Our challenge is always try to take the same topic and make it fresh, right? And, you know, I used to have a boss who would say, right when you're tired of talking about something is when the audience is just getting into it. And so I'm tired of talking about T. Higgins, but I also know you're right. Like when you throw it out there for questions, I'm sure that's what everybody wants to talk about.
Absolutely. Right?
And so that topic moves the meter, but I'm now out of things to say. And so it's, do I regurgitate just the same old takes? You know, I struggle with that. I struggle with that and have on a number of different topics that have arisen throughout the years. I mean, I could do like a greatest hits.
Yeah. I mean, because there's plenty. I mean, sure. Maybe we could just go by era. You could go by era, the greatest hits of each decade, the all decade.
Well, and then you could also do like the... So when the Bengals had the Ring of Honor, we kind of did a funeral for that topic, because on a lazy like June day, you could always pull that off the shelf. Should the Bengals have a Ring of Honor? Why don't they have one? Who would be in it?
In it?
Right. What? I mean, you did an imaginary one, right? Yep. And had me up in studio to talk about who I would. So when they put one in, I'm like, okay, I guess we have to get rid of that one. And then when they got new uniforms, because I was always like, hey, let's freshen up the look. Well, then they got new uniforms. Well, we had to bury that topic because, you know, that was always one that you could pull off the shelf. You know, like there was this thing on an annual basis for years when Andy was the quarterback where it was like, well, is this the year he takes a leap forward? And then I was always the bad guy, like, probably not. But, you know, okay, I might still win some games with him. That was always one that got frustrating and trite for me, but yeah.
The short-term run Hall of Fame, by the way, Andy Dalton's hair.
Oh, I love that one.
I know. It's just, I'm just trying to set you up for your greatest interview that you've done.
The hairdresser.
You had his hairdresser on.
We had the hairdresser on the show. Yeah.
I mean, but that is the type of journalism that we want, right? And that we desire, which is why I look forward to being on your show from 3 to 4.
It's the sort of tomorrow. Stuff we do. It's a sort
and, of stuff. And we'll talk about T. Higgins, maybe.
Probably not.
It's very possible.
Well, and the thing is, unless he, like, because it's, you know, you got to follow all the cryptic tweets. So is there going to be a cryptic tweet? Mm. Like, now you're on cryptic tweet watch with T. Higgins. So maybe he'll send something cryptic and then we have to addressing.
Oh, I hate vague tweet. Vague tweet reaction is just, it's the lowest level. It's when you've reached the point where it's over. Like, that's, to me, that's the end of the conversation. When we're in deep breakdowns over vague tweets, that's when I've absolutely had enough. All right, Mo, appreciate your time. Tuesday, 3 to 4, ESPN 1530, myself and Mo. But you can always get your full serving of Mo every day from 3 to 6 on ESPN 15.
I can't believe I didn't mention practice bubble, because we can't talk about that anymore either.
The bubble. I know so many. This is the problem with new Bengals, right? They've gotten rid of all the old topics that were just hammered into the ground for decades. They're killing you. They're forcing you to be better too.
Good luck with that.
Thanks, Mo.
See ya.
All right. Great having Mo with us. Dave, your thoughts.
Mo is the GOAT. And I will have you say otherwise. Yeah.
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 I'll give
unless you want to debate it. Do you want to debate it?
Maybe we do a Mount Rushmore. a Mount Rushmore of GOATs. Can you do a GOAT Rushmore?
Isn't it funny that, like, GOAT, like, if you're the greatest of all time, that's very singular, yet we throw it around and have all several GOATs. Yeah.
Yes.
Like a herd
really,
of GOATs.
Really can't stand it. So I mentioned in the all-time topics that would drive me mad, the off-field concerns thing. Well, it's back, kind of. Like, it actually popped into my head because this came back when T'Vondre Sweat got the DWI yesterday. And, you know, the Bengals have had these defensive tackles in. They clearly, one of these big sons of guns that play in the middle are going to be on this team. You know, they've brought them in. Sweat, Justin Rogers, Mason Smith. We've seen four. I think there's four of them that have come in now. McKinley Jackson. You've seen all of these guys because they're trying to get a handle on that. These are all guys projected second round, third round, fourth round, somewhere in there. Top of that group. And him being at the top, and he's been one of the most discussed. So it's brought back. Well, the Bengals clearly would take on somebody who's got all. They don't care, right? They don't. Now, I do think a portion of that still exists. I don't think they're going to necessarily be scared off by this. I also don't think he necessarily moves a ton on their board. You already knew you were getting this. Yeah. Like, he didn't have to go get. I mean, this is an all-time stupid. I mean, the draft is like 2 weeks away, bro. All you got to do is just hold on tight, get the Uber, you know, whatever you got to do for the next couple of weeks. Get drafted and go DUWI yourself wherever you want to go, I guess. I don't mean actually do that. I'm just saying, like,
right.
You know, this isn't about the crime. This is about decision-making as a human being is what it's about. And so, but I think they already knew that you worried about decision making with Sweat. He's had these weight issues. He's had these motivation issues. People have talked about off the field stuff, because when he's doing it and going for it on the field, he's a first round talent, man. Like, he's a dude. But all the other stuff has been why he's talked about in round two. So I don't necessarily think it changes it. He's still tantalizing he's just a boom bust, and you know you're getting something that could bust because you worry about some of the motivational and decision-making stuff like this, but I don't know that it moves it that far. They're willing to take it on, but they're far less tolerant of stupid decision-making with people than they used to be. I think there was a thought in the past they could coach that out of them, right? I don't think this particular regime views it that way. I think they have the proper view that in some respects you are who you are and you get what you get if you try to use that as your advantage to get value on a guy.
Yeah. Well, a couple things. One, it's funny that back at Super Bowl, we said somebody will screw up and do something stupid and get arrested at the Super Bowl. You can almost count on that every year with the draft. There's always a dude that does this sort of stupid thing. It was Jalen Carter It was Laramie Tunsil way back in the day. It was Warren Sapp. There's always some knucklehead that just can't behave leading up to the draft. And it is a sign of they maybe can't behave in life in general. But here's the thing, and I think it does kind of go back to that stigma the Bengals had for so long about being the team of recluses and non-law-abiding citizens. Every team out there will still take a guy if he's talented. There's not a team out there that's so high and mighty that they're just not going to take a guy. And if teams feel like they can get extra value on this guy because he drops a little bit, then they're definitely going to take him. And I think Jalen Carter is a great example. Was, you know, a guy, people died from his car racing incident. Yeah. And yet there the Eagles took him. And by like week three, everyone's like, oh, everybody was stupid for passing on Jalen Carter. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but to say that any team out there is not going to take a guy if they see max value is crazy. They're all going to do it. So I think you're probably right. The Bengals probably see the value in him, just like a lot of other teams do. And he probably kind of sticks in that spot for better or worse. But, you know, you can be asking for trouble down the road. That's just the business of it, in my opinion. And
yeah,
I don't know that it changes much, but other teams will pounce on him if they don't. It's not like he's just going to drop out of the draft because he did a very stupid thing.
No. Rashee Rice is a good example. I mean, there was notable concerns about who he was off the field last year. And, you know, Kansas City said, we're willing to do it. Well, and they reaped the benefits, and now they're feeling the other side of it. Cause eventually you do worry that guys are who they are in many respects. And that only gets amplified more once they've gotten, you can almost always get one good year, right? They show up, it's a new place. My first job, I want to be the man. You're going to get the best version of that guy for a year. Typically. Then they're the man, they've got money, they've got fame, and you're only going to then lean more into your core. Now, you can always mature. You can always turn the corner. But I think that's when you start to worry about those risks is in year two and three specifically, because they're still young. They're still all the kind of who they were. And now it's only been amplified by fame and money and notoriety and all that stuff. And some of that change, you get a better view of that now because NIL, like these guys get money earlier. You see how they handle some of that stuff and the fame earlier a little bit more. But you still know what that can become when they're just, hey, they've got lots of free time and ability to make decisions on their hands. And if they're typically the type of person you worry about the decisions that they make, well, you got to deal with that.
Yeah. Those guys become really the biggest risk reward guys in the draft. And if it was a one-off thing and they're not a knucklehead, you know, good for you. And really, I hate to throw Joe Mixon's name out there because things got kind of weird over the past year and a half, but for how long was he a model citizen after his incident? And I'm certainly not condoning anything involved with that, but you can come out the other side with something that works out pretty well. But again, then you had weird stuff come up with Joe Mixon years later. So I don't know. Maybe it's always there. Maybe there is growing up, but
you never know.
It's just the chance. There's just going to be a risk assessment every team's going to do on Tavondre Sweat, and somebody's still going to probably take him, I would bet, in that same range that he was projected.
You are in the game of predicting human behavior. Yeah. Good luck. A lot of people have been trying to do that for centuries. Okay. Yeah. Millennia. All right. You're just not like there's just no way. And that takes me back, you know, to kind of wrap up this whole conversation to the Duke Tobin point of view. And one that I think most really talented GMs get. If you get too full of yourself, thinking I can draft better than everyone else and I know better, that's when you lose from consistency over the years. More swings. You just need more picks because the more swings you get, the better chance you have of getting hits, because you're not going to hit at a higher rate for the most part. I mean, that's just the bottom line of it. There's just not a lot that would ever suggest of what has happened in this draft that you show up and I see it better than everybody else does. Too many people, there's too much information, people know too much. There's there to think that you've got all kinds of angles that absolutely nobody else does. You can maybe be a little bit better. You can have a decent hit rate. You can be good at certain things. But for the most part, getting yourself the most swings is going to be the way for every team to get the most hits, not, you know, saying that I picked the best player because I know how to pick the best players. That's not necessarily how it works, but that's my final thought on that as we wrap it up. Jay, do you got any Arby's or Jay? See, I was going to talk about Arby's and I instantly thought of Jay, Dave. I'm ready to do the Arby's. And my first thought was Jay loves fries, curly fries, yeah. Beef and cheddars. No, he doesn't like the cheddar. We know that. He actually likes just the roast beef sandwich. But do you have anything? Any good stories?
I got nothing.
I got WrestleMania talk.
Yeah.
WrestleMania happened this weekend. And we were kind of talking before a show about how, you know, I don't really watch wrestling much anymore, but back in the day, really the best part of wrestling was always like when the intro was when the music went off, right? And everyone's like, and this happened, I guess, this weekend. Undertaker showed back up out of nowhere. One of the all-time great entrances, just a dong and the place goes dark. Like that is epic. I think the NFL should lean into this. I think teams should lean into this. Like, I love the idea of you have your third down running back is just a beast, right? Like, let's say like Tajay Spears, or let's just say Chase Brown comes in a reverse. Anytime he comes onto the field, like, boom, like that's, my God, that's Chase Brown's music, right? I want to have that in between, like anytime somebody that only plays 10 plays a game, when he comes in, it's like the sixth offensive lineman with Jackson Carmen would come in to be like the big tight end blocking offensive lineman. That should have some kind of music associated with it. Oh my God, that's Jackson Carmen's music. They've gone jumbo. You know,
it reminds me of,
we need to get a full lean.
Applying it to other sports, the best you've probably seen it is with closers coming in baseball.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Mariano Rivera and Trevor Hoffman or Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn. Mm-hmm. The only thing I've seen that where it's kind of that way in football is when there's a punt returner that everybody fears, whether it's Devin Hester, it's Reggie Bush, DeSean Jackson, that when they came in, the place would just ramp up because of that. And that would be perfect for some entrance music for a stud punt returner.
You know who had this? And this connects both of us. Russell Wilson. He had when he would come in for Seattle, they would play Fishes. Wilson, the whole crowd would chant. So that was kind of a version of it. Look, connects your Seahawks, my fished them. You know, one of the few things that connects us, Dave.
And Baldwin had
it. But I think that's it. I think the punters, should punters have music?
I don't see why not.
Brad Robbins' music is just like. Hopefully Brad kicks better. Hopefully it turns. But if you got a punter that fans are just not feeling right, I think we need more. I think we need more of this individual player theme music for when they come in. Your role players, let's play them up.
The music dropping is pretty special, but I don't know. Love you it. Just got guys coming in and out on packages. I don't know how that works. Is that the third down linebackers music just dropped? I don't know. I don't know how you fit it in.
Davis Gaither has entered the game.
Love it. All right. Thanks everybody for listening. Jay and I will be back on Wednesday. We're going wide receivers. We're going all in on these receivers. Specifically these day two guys, there's so many of them. Hayden Winks from Underdog Fantasy is going to join and talk a little bit about all of those guys, and we're going to kind of give you the full view of what that looks like. So looking forward to doing that with Jay on Wednesday, and of course Hooday Light with Mark on Friday. Send your questions in. You guys drive that show, so send your questions in thegrowlerpodcast@gmail.com if you have anything that you'd like for us to touch on Friday's show. So we'll make sure we get through that. All right, thanks everybody for listening. We will talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.